You're listening to The Culture Report, Voice of Russia, America's weekly look into the world of arts, culture, and history. I'm your host, Rob Sachs. As New York continues to clean up from the damage of Superstorm Sandy, many cities across the Atlantic are breathing a sigh of relief that they've taken the necessary measures to protect themselves against a similar type of storm surge. One of those places is St. Petersburg, which lies on the Neva Bay in Russia and is protected by the St. Petersburg Dam. Now, some are saying New York would be well advised to follow in Russia's footsteps. Here to talk more about this is Malcolm Bowman. He is a distinguished professor of oceanography at Stony Brook University, where he runs the Stony Brook Storm Surge Research Center at the School of Marine and Atmospheric Research Sciences. Welcome, Professor Bowman.
Thank you.
So, what do you think New York could learn from St. Petersburg?
I've studied storm surge protection systems around Europe for some time, including the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Italy, and Russia, and I have been impressed with the sophisticated system that has been built around the city of St. Petersburg. This was started many years ago during the Soviet era, and then it ran out of money and it became to a halt, but it's been finished now with the aid of European Union loans and a large engineering firm coordinated from Scotland and the United Kingdom. So I believe that this was officially opened last year, but it's a magnificent system of elevated six-lane highways which extend around the city of St. Petersburg, which, as your listeners may know, is built on a river delta, the River Neva, and low-lying land, and has been chronically flooded with storm surges over the centuries. So this elevated highway extends out into the harbor beyond the city itself as a series of seawalls, some of which allow a hollow. They allow the water to flow in and out underneath. And then they come together with a series of large rotating gates, a bit like saloon doors, I call them, that swing open when necessary. Normally these gates would be wide open, except during the periods of stormy weather in the Baltic Sea. Then they're shut, and that keeps the storm surges out of the city itself. So it looks like it's a very effective region, and it occurred to me that it would be a good model for New York City because both cities are built on river deltas, St. Petersburg on the Neva and New York City on the Hudson River Delta, and they're both prone to flooding. These rivers are navigable, so they're large rivers that thread throughout the cities, the two cities, and it seemed to me that we could develop a similar system here that would be most effective.
What are the big barriers, though, for New York to build something like this? Is it cost or political will or a combination of all that?
Well, I think it's probably both. You introduced the St. Petersburg system as a dam. I think that word dam, to put a bit of a pun, has damning kind of connotations in that people get the impression that you're building some monstrous concrete structure that will block up the natural flow of the tides, that will be an eyesore, that will be maybe never used for 50 years. So people are concerned about that part of it. They are concerned about the cost. But in the end, it all comes down to the political will to have a bold new approach, what I call the regional approach, rather than piecemeal approach, which the city presently follows. By that, I mean resilience. That's the buzzword around town. Resilience means if you have a vulnerable place, a power station that's on the river that floods, you build a wall around it. If you have a subway station or tunnel that gets flooded, you elevate it. If you have a sewage treatment plant that backs up at high tides, you build a pumping system. This is called resilience. It's very important. It must be done, but it's not enough. So by that, I mean there will come a storm, and we saw that a month ago with Sandy, that will overwhelm all these local fixes. And so I feel the time has come when New York City has to look at a bolder regional approach. And I point people to St. Petersburg because I think that's a very good model.
Well, thinking about that model, too, I mean, this project in St. Petersburg started in 1979, only completed a year ago. When you have these huge public works projects, how do you even go about doing this? I mean, when you think about something like the Big Dig, how they try to transform the highway system in Boston or something like that. Is it take the federal government, not just local and state government, to really push something like this forward?
Well, I think it does. I think New York City, the government of this whole region, is complicated. There are federal interests, state, three states, in fact, and counties, cities. It's some overlapping jurisdictions. It's very, very complicated politically. You're right. The European experience, not just in Russia, but also in England, in the Netherlands, and Italy, all of these systems they have now put in place took 20, 30 years to come about. And it was usually it was triggered off by a catastrophe of some sort where there was a lot of loss of human life and property. In the southeast England and the Netherlands, it was a huge storm in the North Sea in 1953 that drowned several thousand people and flooded much of Holland. And so that triggered off a response. But it was almost 29 years to be exact, that the Thames River barrier, a storm surge barrier in the Thames River protecting the City of London, was not officially opened until 1982. So no one's talking about pouring concrete next week. What needs to happen is a sophisticated analysis by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, who have the responsibility for the maintenance of navigable waters in the United States, to look at the pros and cons of a regional solution, storm surge barriers, man-made structures, as well as enhancing the natural sand dunes to protect the city. And this study might take at least 5 years. So we're talking about a long-term solution. So now is the time to start thinking about it.
You talked about natural barriers. What could be done without pouring tons of concrete? Is there a way to have sand dunes or other things like that kind of take the brunt of a storm so it wouldn't go right smack into the city?
Well, yes, there is. And if you go to the Netherlands, where I was last summer, and took a look at these, what I call enhanced sand dunes, half of their coastline is protected by these natural enhanced dunes, and the other half is protected by a series of storm barriers. But the sand dunes are effective. They require continuing maintenance and renourishment by pumping dredge sand from offshore. The ocean off New York is full of good sand material. It's expensive. It has to be renewed again and again because even smaller storms than Sandy can wash the sand back to the sea. So it's an ongoing commitment. There is a lot that can be done, but they would have to be high. They would have to be 30 feet high, and the trouble is it blocks people's views. And as you know, the people treasure their ocean views if they're lucky enough to live there. And so the thought of blocking their views is a real problem. In the Netherlands, when I looked at these enhanced sand dunes, behind the dunes were these seaside communities, very neat, very nice places, very secure, but they cannot see the ocean. So they have traded security for the view.
How much is preparing people to live in different places, to relocate, not live so close to places where you're in a low-lying floodplain?
That's a very difficult thing, to start relocating people in their homes. Some of them are summer homes. We're talking about now the south shore of Long Island and then northern New Jersey, and then the south shore of Staten Island, which is part of New York City. That was devastating, and that's where most of the loss of life occurred, but people, you know, are very emotionally attached to their homes, their property. It's very hard to move people. It's a consequence of, you might say, a bad planning practices going back decades. A lot can be accomplished in terms of the availability of floodplain insurance or not. You only encourage people to do this if they can buy flood insurance, which in the case of the federal government is subsidized by all the taxpayers. So there's arguments to be made there that it should be more difficult to get insurance. And another approach might be, that I've seen used in other countries, is that the residents who insist on staying are told, look, you can live there at your own risk for as long as you live, but you cannot sell the property and you cannot give it to your descendants. And that's a kind of a compromise. That would be a difficult political sell. I know that. But It provides a bit of a pathway for people to continue to enjoy that lifestyle where they raise their families, perhaps, where they want to stay for the duration of their natural life. That has not been tried anywhere, as far as I know, but that would be something that could work.
Well, getting back to this idea, too, of a storm barrier or some type of system that would come down and block water from rushing in, one criticism of what's been put in place in St. Petersburg was that not blocking the waters coming in, but preventing waters from going out, and that you had a lot more wastewater trapped in. During storms, you have a lot of sewage, raw sewage, spilling out into the water. How can you make sure that that effect isn't multiplied if you have barriers coming down and locking that water in?
Well, that's a very good question. Well, the first point is, in the Baltic Sea, the tidal currents are very weak. So that water that's trapped inside is not really flushed out by the incoming and the outgoing tides. It just sits there. That's a big problem. But what would have to be done in New York City, I've been proposing a barrier system stretching from Sandy Hook, New Jersey, up to what's called Far Rockaway on the southwestern tip of Long Island. That's a five-mile gap. It's fairly shallow. It's only about 7 or 8 meters deep, 20 to 25 feet. But it would have to be hollow. These barriers would be more like bridges, where the normal tidal flow in and out is maintained. That's absolutely essential. You're quite right. You cannot block up the harbor for very long. There is sewage, treated sewage and sometimes untreated during storms, coming from perhaps 12 million people into New York Harbor, both from the New York side and from the New Jersey side. And there has to be a flushing action that's maintained. These barriers in areas like New York, where there is a strong tide, would only be closed for perhaps 3 hours at a time at the local high tide. That's the dangerous period. And with Sandy, what made it so bad was that the storm hit at exactly high tide when the water was at its highest level. The moon was full. That gave it an extra spring tide, it's called. But you're right. There has to be porous during normal operations, so that the system does flush. So that is a serious consideration.
And you mentioned that in St. Petersburg, too, there's this highway that goes across this, and I called it a dam, but it's really, the correct name is the St. Petersburg Flood Prevention Facility Complex. The nickname for it, I guess, is the St. Petersburg Dam. But could this be another maybe selling point, saying, hey, this could be a source of, you know, another highway, another means of transportation getting around New York?
Absolutely. I think that the question is raised, well, how could you raise the $15 to $20 billion necessary to build this thing? Well, I would say make this a six-lane interstate highway, a toll road. It would be a New York City bypass from northern New Jersey to Long Island, including Kennedy Airport, that I would say that people would easily be happy to pay $20 to get a car, not have to drive through the congested traffic jams in New York City. It could be a light rail connection from northern New Jersey to also to JFK Airport. I think making it a multi-purpose system makes it a lot more attractive and a lot more sellable to a public who are reluctant to spend huge amounts of money of their hard-earned incomes.
So that could be something, or find a way to pay for it. But some are saying Sandy wasn't enough, that the devastation wasn't bad enough. Perhaps the city responded in a way that was acceptable enough that people are saying, well, we'll just have to hold our breath and hope that this doesn't happen again. This was a fluke, a 100-year storm. But when could the next Sandy happen? I mean, will it be in another 100 years or so? Or is this going to happen more often where New Yorkers can't be that short-sighted?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge the reality of climate change. We have to acknowledge that sea level is rising, and this is not just theory. It's rising much faster in New York than other parts of the world because the East Coast is actually dropping. It's dropping about 1 foot every 100 years, and this is not due to climate change now, but it's a consequence of a readjustment of the whole North American continent following the last ice age. 100,000 years ago, there was a mile or two of ice above New York, and it depressed the Earth's crust. The weight of it pushed it down. And when that melted, the crust started coming up. But it's like sitting on a fresh loaf of bread. When you get off it, it tries to rise again and more or less make its original shape. But it turns out that the edges of the crust are actually going down. So if you're standing at the water's edge in New York, you're actually going down a foot every 100 years. But that's the same thing as the sea coming up. So we have to contend with that, and we've been measuring that. That's not, as I said, that's not just speculation or theory. But looking ahead, scientists are, depending on how quickly the ice cover on Greenland melts, sea level on the east coast of the United States could be 3 to 6 feet, 1 to 2 meters higher than it is now. What does that mean? That means that storm surges from even moderate storms in the future, they ride on the rising sea level. The storm surge is on top of that. So it means that more modest storms will create surges like Sandy did last month. So they will become more frequent. The damage will become more serious. In addition, climate scientists are predicting maybe not more hurricanes, but those that we get will be more furious, will be more dangerous. Why? Because hurricanes derive their energy from the warm tropical surface waters of the Atlantic Ocean. They form in near the Caribbean. They propagate up the East Coast. They get a shot of energy from the Gulf Stream. So as the temperatures of the world's oceans increase, therefore the hurricanes will be more ferocious. So that reason as well will give us cause to worry. I cannot say that another 100-year storm will come next year. Of course I cannot. But as Governor Andrew Cuomo said after Sandy hit, that we've had 2 100-year storms a year apart, the previous one being Hurricane Irene, although that damage, most of the damage there was inland due to flooding by torrential rains, whereas most of the damage from Sandy was from the ocean surge. So they're different 100-year storms, but the state government still has to face up to rebuilding the infrastructure. So I think we will see these more often.
That's Malcolm Bowman. He is a distinguished professor of oceanography at Stony Brook University, where he runs the Stony Brook Storm Surge Research Center at the School of Marine and Atmospheric Research Sciences. Professor Bowman, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.